This episode brought to you by Cafe Imports, Minneapolis-based importers of fine specialty green coffees. Independently owned and operated since 1993, Cafe Imports has been dedicated to decreasing its impact on the earth through renewable energy, carbon neutrality, and by supporting conservational efforts in places where quality coffee is grown and also where quality coffee is consumed. Where does your coffee come from?
And by the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. As a nonprofit, we rely on support from listeners like you. If you like what you hear, please consider a donation. To learn more and make a gift, visit us at www.gosuperior.org.
Welcome to the Lake Superior Podcast. I'm Walt Lindela.
And I'm Frida Wara. We are made stronger by story, and there's no better source than the continent's largest body of fresh water, Lake Superior.
So join us as we highlight the five national parks that ring this greatest of the Great Lakes, meet the people, tour the places, and learn about the projects that make these parks and body of water so remarkable.
This podcast made possible with the support of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation and Media Brew Communications.
I'm Walt Lindela.
And I'm Frida Wara.
Welcome once again to the Lake Superior Podcast. Today, Frida, a conversation with a veteran of our podcast. We're going to talk with Phyllis Green here in just a moment. She is a National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation board member and former superintendent at Isle Royale National Park. But this is really about something that actually, if you follow Great Lakes news, this has been in it for a while. And I know you kind of put this together. What are we touching on here today?
Well, when we look at that big blue out there, you know, it's basically 37,000 square miles of amazing water and being at the very tip of our greatest freshwater watershed on the whole planet, really. And Lake Superior being the coldest, the deepest, the biggest, it's also the most vulnerable. And when we look at invasive species and what they have done over the course of history, as soon as we had the Welland Canal and we circumvented then the Niagara Falls, things changed in our Great Lakes. And we have got to keep that eye always on that horizon of what's up and coming and what can be happening in our water. And, you know, one of the best people to understand what that big blue is all about spent 18 years as superintendent at Isle Royale. And that's really when she got started on the whole ballast water project in Lake Superior. And there's no one better to talk to us about it today than Phyllis Green.
Yeah, Phyllis, welcome back to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Ballast water. Let's start with kind of a simple question there. What, when we hear the term ballast water, what is that? Why is this also a concern here in the Great Lakes?
Well, the easiest example of ballast water is if you jump off a dock onto a inner tube, it slips on you, right? So ships actually, when they take cargo on, have the same potential to skip or to slip if they don't offset the weight of the cargo with water. And so that means basically when they're in a port such as the Baltic Sea and they're picking up water, they also pick up all the little critters that are native to the Baltic Seas and bring them over. And I think some of the most prominent ones, of course, have been zebra mussels is the one that's really worked its way across the U.S. So, you know, it becomes an aquarium, if you will, on the way over. And then when they discharge for cargo operations, they let loose these invasive species. And there have been some voluntary things to try to reduce that transport, but really the best safeguard is going to be treating all ships that are in the Great Lakes with ballast.
Well, this sounds like a very daunting thing to do. I mean, there's a lot of shipping. There's a lot of vessels moving across multiple ports. But this has grown into a concern in the Great Lakes. You mentioned zebra mussels. We've heard about those. Tell us a little bit about the severity of this as an issue.
Well, zebra mussels spread so far and so fast, they ended up like in the water distribution systems out west and clogged some of the waterways that feed crops. And basically here, you know, a lot of Great Lakes cities have water intake out of the Great Lakes, and those zebra mussels clog those intakes. And so they're constantly trying to manage the zebra mussels to get them out of the intake areas. And so, and, you know, even the lamprey, we're spending tens of millions of dollars on that annually just to try to keep it under control so that our sport fishery and commercial fisheries is healthy.
Is there also a danger, Phyllis, not just with invasive species, but also some native species, maybe of the lower Great Lakes coming into the colder lakes? Is that also kind of moving around a challenge as well?
Well, the foundation's position that we wrote into EPA, who are basically making the next round of decisions on what to manage for ballast water, we sent them a note that said, well, an official letter that said, we would like you to put treatment and mandate treatment on all of the Laker fleet. They are known, it's been documented by Sarah Bailey, who's an outstanding researcher of this issue from Canada, that they move the lower species up into the upper lakes, and they're moving some of the upper ones down. So they play a role in moving things. And one other reason to make sure that they have treatment on them is, although we focus on ballast water because it has been very problematic, there's other pathways that can dump invasive species into the Great Lakes. And then if they don't have treatment on them, they're just going to move them around. That's what's going to happen.
Before we get into a little bit more about the foundation history and involvement with this, I'm curious, in terms of ships that are sailing with cargo on Lake Superior, do we really have that many, and are they traveling internationally?
There's only around 60 or 70 Lakers, if you will, and there's a small amount of foreign travel, but the Lakers move tens of millions of ballast gallons, if you will, because they are moving coal and very heavy product from the upper, you know, the Duluth and Canadian shore down to places in southern Michigan and Ohio. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's, you know, at one point I was saying, well, why don't we just pay all those Lakers to get treatment on? Because they seem to have been able to avoid it now. And I've been working on this issue since 2007. And I am just amazed that they are not under regulation yet. And I think it really takes a concerned citizenry to keep in touch with their legislators and to let folks know that they really don't want their fishing and their freshwater attributes denigrated by additional invasive species.
What was, back in 2007, you were still at Isle Royale at the time, what was the beginnings of pushing this forward and getting those filtering systems out there?
Well, for me, it really centered around viral hemorrhagic septicemia, which they found in the lower lake, and it's like Ebola for fish. So it kills fish by the tons. It's a highly virulent disease. And I was hoping that it would not get into the upper Great Lakes. And so we run a ballasted ship on our Royal. It's called the Ranger 3. It certainly doesn't have anywhere near the gallons that a big Laker does. But we got working with U.S. Geological Survey and Michigan Technological University on how could we dose that boat, the Ranger 3, so that we're not moving species from the Houghton Dock area out to Isle Royale, or if, heaven forbid, something gets out to Isle Royale, we're not moving it back. So we came up with a very simple emergency treatment system, and it works. And we knew then that we had something we could do for the National Park Service within our jurisdiction if there was a problem. But we also wanted to see if we could get industry to support emergency treatment when they know something's in a port. Right now, all they do is they reduce uptake, but it's all based on ship safety. So if the ship's they deem the ship's safety needs to pull in ballast water, then they'll do it anyway. And they really need treatment. That's the only thing. So back in 2008, working with the university and USGS, we scaled up emergency treatment system, and we took it out to the International Maritime Organization for approval. And it actually, just this past year, I'm amazed at how bureaucracies can ball things up, if you don't know the truth.
Well, I think Phyllis has told me once before that the national park system kind of worked in dog years, so we can just imagine what you're saying there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, in this case, we wanted to have that... we wanted to have an easy fix for when they found something new that they could start treating in that port area. And we were fortunate enough to get GLRI, or Great Lakes Fisheries Trust, actually, money to expand that emergency response treatment. And it basically, we found out when they were doing their first round of regulation, they didn't allow for emergency treatment of ballast. When I've asked the U.S. Coast Guard why they haven't approved this system, they say, "Oh, well, we don't have regulations that will cover that." And it's like, "Oh, come now!" They handle all kinds of emergencies wonderfully. I think they could work on this one also. So basically, we went and we worked with a private industry partner. And since 2008, they took the emergency response treatment, and when they were blocked by getting it into a emergency treatment, they used the same equipment in a permanent install, and the Coast Guard has approved that. And the only difference between what the Coast Guard approved and what is available now is that when we do it for emergencies, we go on and off a ship. And we treat it, we pull all the equipment and come off, because it's just designed to deal with newly found issues, if you will, of invasive species. But we went all the way, that whole process, which included international maritime approval of the system as a permanent install, took until 2022 to go through approvals on permanent treatment. And then when we asked them to approve it, because it's essentially the same system, just mobile. That's when they said, "Oh, we don't know that we can do that." And so now we're hopeful that the EPA, who has a slightly different rules to deal with than the U.S. Coast Guard, will create an avenue for emergency treatment, so that when we find something, we can block its spread as best we can. And we're also hoping that they will continue to get more treatment systems for permanent installs available for Lakers.
We're talking with Phyllis Green today on the Lake Superior podcast. She is a board member with the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, also former superintendent with the Isle Royale National Park. We're talking about ballast water, filtering of that ballast water, and why this is important, especially here on Lake Superior. When we talk about filtering and filtering systems, are we talking about highly expensive systems? Do they work? Is there some particular reason maybe that industry is reluctant? Is it cost? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, industry is reluctant. The freshwater fleet is reluctant to use chlorine as a basis, even though, you know, it's in all of our water systems and it's used pretty widely. There's more water in swimming pools in Michigan than there are in ballast ballast treatment system, if we were to use it. So basically, you're kind of getting into the more complex part of it. The chlorine does not have to be a problem if you lower the dose and extend the time. You know, if you do a real high dose of chlorine and in a quick turnaround time that might be problematic. But they're finding out more and more. The other thing is, you know, we just want an avenue for emergency treatment at the foundation. If somebody comes up with a better idea that's more acceptable to industry, we'd be all for it. But we haven't seen that. Most of what's come out of other innovators have been things that are extremely expensive and don't work with the way the ships actually have pumping and do their ballast exchanges. So I hope I don't get too technical on you. But,
no, you're not. As a matter of fact, what I'm hearing is more of a voice of frustration by having a problem identified, having a solution available, and running into these roadblocks that make it incredibly frustrating, I'm sure, because you're aware of the potential dangers, problems, and issues it could create. So it's not getting hyper-technical. As a matter of fact, I was going to ask you in terms of if this was all kind of put in and you had compliance and everybody started to do this, how is this policed? How does the EPA, how does the Coast Guard, like, stay on top of this? And then also sharing waters with Canada. I mean, there's a lot of factors. What could you share with us?
Well, Canada's way ahead of us, and I really thank them for proceeding forward when we kind of drug our feet. The U.S. Coast Guard and EPA set their own standards for treatment processes for ballast, and that meant everybody who wanted to develop one had to go through a time-consuming and very expensive process to be able to deliver it. Canada took a different path. They said, well, the International Maritime Organization is going to require treatment. So even though it might not be as good as what in the long haul the U.S. is seeking, it can come online faster because the technology is going to be there and be able to be used. And so when they do approvals at the International Maritime Organization, they look at approving it for how effective it is in saltwater for the majority of the transits across the ocean. But they also have testing for freshwater. And I think that, you know, we're really on the cusp of having treatment systems that can work for Lakers. And to show you how Canada's been kind of trying to be in a leadership role, they did require Lakers to put treatment on, and they got pushback from industry saying it wasn't possible. So what they did in Canada is they said, well, let's put some money on it. You identify some problems in industry, and we will work with you with some funding for research and development to eliminate those problems. So that's where Canada is right now, and that actually sets a very uneven playing field in the Great Lakes, because here, in good faith, we might have Canadian ships treating all of them, Lakers and Salties, and then just across that border, unless EPA makes the decision to require ballast treatment on Lakers, we're not doing it. We wouldn't be doing it. And that's wrong.
Is there anything we, as a lover of Lake Superior, a concerned citizen, what can we do to move that needle?
I think you got to let, you know, it's like people have been working on this for decades. So I think it's easy to get weary or, you know, the news just keeps coming out and you can't hang on to it. But you still need to engage with your legislators, federal legislators in particular. Although Michigan is one of the few states that has, under the water quality agreement, the state has ability to regulate water. But in the last round of, they call it VDA, Vessel Incident Discharge Act, they took that power away from the states. So they stripped everything out from the states and gave the authorities to the feds, who haven't really closed the circle on invasives in the Great Lakes.
We're talking with Phyllis Green here on the Lake Superior podcast. I feel like, Phyllis, you had other words to use at that case, but we understand. We're talking about ballast water and issues with that and invasive species in the Great Lakes. And, you know, you've really sparked some interest here, and I hope for our listeners as well. Where can people find out more? You talk about the history of this, that it's been going on for some time. How can people tap into that?
They could go to an Alliance for the Great Lakes website because they're an overarching non-governmental organization that has been trying to deal with this for decades. National Wildlife Federation has. I think we'll be posting our input into EPA from this fall. I don't know that we have it up yet, but it definitely needs to be looked at because industry was saying, the Laker industry was saying, oh, you know, ever since we started doing saltwater exchange, which is where salties were required when they were out in the middle of the ocean where the saline was the highest, if they exchanged the water in the tanks, most of the freshwater critters couldn't survive that heavy salt dose. So what, and that started back, you know, in the early 2000s. And so they've been using that as, oh, we haven't had a new invasive species since we implemented that. So why do we need to do more? And they need to do more because basically there have been five new species found in the last 5 years. It's not out for publication yet, but you know, before I got back into this to do the comments for EPA for the foundation, I wanted to make sure it was still an issue. You know, can you believe that it's not an issue? And no, if you go to the top researchers that are monitoring, there's five species that have been discovered. They haven't quite figured out yet how invasive they are. So it always takes a while when you're dealing with research, but they can't say that anymore. And they can't say they're not moving it because the research for Lakers has proven they move critters.
I just look at the importance of water to this planet and the importance of Lake Superior's water to this planet. And I can feel that frustration. And definitely we want to tag to this the on our website. We will have those addresses for folks to look at and make sure that we have the websites as well. But, you know, this is the reason to get behind the power of the pen and let people know we don't have that much time. Five new species found in the last 5 years. And we look at the, as you said, Phyllis, the tens of millions of dollars still being spent on lamprey control. It's just mind-boggling that we could be so far behind, especially when our neighbor, Canada, can they shame us? You know, I mean, my goodness.
They're a little polite for that.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, what are, you know, I guess as we wrap this up today here, our conversation, Phyllis, and we're talking with Phyllis Green, who is a board member with the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, former superintendent at Isle Royale National Park, about the issues with ballast water on vessels and invasive species. What are your final thoughts to leave with our listeners about this issue and to potentially getting involved?
Well, the public input for the EPA rules has closed, but it doesn't mean that you can't engage with your senators and House of Representatives and just say, hey, this agency, we'd like you to keep an eye on it because we need to change things. It's been, since I started, 15 years, and it's like we haven't gotten where we need to be. I know the federal government works slowly, but this is way too slow, and it's going to cause so much damage if we continue to avoid it. And then the inequity between the Canadian shipping and the U.S. shipping on the Great Lakes is something that shouldn't happen at all.
Phyllis Green with us here today, who is a board member with the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, also former superintendent at the Isle Royale National Park. Phyllis, I think that's a good way to leave it right there because we can't overlook the importance of it, and we can't let our politicians that make these decisions simply hang their hat on saying, oh, we protect the Great Lakes and we believe in them when you've got something this obvious in front of them. Hopefully it gets picked up soon. Thanks for your time this morning, Phyllis. It's been a pleasure having you back on, and let's keep in touch. Have you back on sometime as this continues to move forward.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Phyllis Green with us, National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation board member, also former superintendent of Isle Royale National Park. And boy, there was some real information there, if I say so myself, Frida, that a lot to think of. We hear about invasive species in the news. We've heard about zebra mussels and lampreys. eye-opening to me that she says that there are five new species that haven't been fully identified and they're still in the process, but they came in 5 years. This is really something that needs to be paid attention to.
Well, and how zebra mussels have impacted the intake of the western states. And certainly our western states are also in such a dangerous position with their water supply for the future. And when we look at what we have here, I'm also so grateful, you know, well, we talk a lot about the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, but let this also be an example for our listeners to go and investigate a little bit more about what our board does. And granted, we had Phyllis. It's just her mind and understanding so much about how government works because of her 18 years at Isle Royale, but also being so connected to Lake Superior and really, you know, carrying the flag forward for us.
Government moves slowly, but it moves faster when you give it a little nudge, and hopefully we'll get some folks to do that. So we thank Phyllis for her time. And of course, we'll link up that information with the posting of this podcast on our website. But if there is something that you would like to have us cover, maybe we've piqued your interest, let us know. You can send messages also to the foundation website and wherever you're linking in with this particular podcast. But good to be back for another go around for another season, Frida. And, you know, I got to admit this. I think we might be tapping into some very interesting information over the next few episodes. So that's going to do it for us this time around. I'm Walt Lindela.
I'm Frida Wara. Thanks for listening. The National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, NPLSF, is the only official nonprofit 501c3 fundraising partner of the National Park Service for all five U.S. National Park sites on Lake Superior.
To learn more about NPLSF projects and programs, you can visit the website at nplsf.org or friend them on Facebook.
I'm Frida Wara.
And I'm Walt Lindela. Thanks for listening to the Lake Superior Podcast.
This podcast made possible with the support of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation and Media Brew Communications.
This episode brought to you by Cafe Imports, Minneapolis-based importers of fine specialty green coffees. Independently owned and operated since 1993, Cafe Imports has been dedicated to decreasing its impact on the earth through renewable energy, carbon neutrality, and by supporting conservational efforts in places where quality coffee is grown and also where quality coffee is consumed. Where does your coffee come from?
And by the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. As a nonprofit, we rely on support from listeners like you. If you like what you hear, please consider a donation. To learn more and make a gift, visit us at www.gosuperior.org.